Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
So, Harry Dent, welcome to the program. It is so great to see you, and I'm sorry that you couldn't make it down to Australia with all this crazy coronavirus that's going on. And down here in Australia, as you know, we've escaped the worst of it. However, our borders are still not being opened up, and it's a crazy world we live in. But you've been talking about a lot of what's going on in Australia, and I wanted to have you on the program today I'm very passionate about waking people up and letting them actually understand, because I think that there's a lot of complacency and a lot of people kind of saying, it'll be okay, especially, you know what Australians are like. We always just turn around and go, she'll be right, mate. So I'm gonna hand over to you, because this is really interesting because of the way you look at the demographics of what's going on. And I know your thoughts about real estate in Australia. So let's start off with some of your views on what's going on. And has the coronavirus been the catalyst to push this forward, or was it always going to happen?
Yeah. I mean, I look at the virus as what I call the perfect trigger for a debt and financial asset bubble crisis that's been building for years. I mean, it started with the GFC. When the GFC got as bad as I predicted it would be, like a depression, central banks just decided, well, wait a minute, we can't have that. So they just started printing infinite amounts of money. You know, everybody printed in 2009, and then Mario Draghi and the ECB in Europe took the lead in 2011 and 12 with the Greek and Euro crisis. And then Japan, who'd been in recession forever, who had a bubble burst in the early 90s, way before any of us. And I was the only one in the world that forecast that. When Japan was at its height in 1989, I said, sorry, folks, they're at the top of their whole baby boom spending cycle. They've got bubbles in real estate, bubbles in stocks, and they're going to crash in the 90s while everybody else has the greatest boom in history. People thought I was a certifiable idiot. So that one I saw coming, and it's just demographics. They had their baby boom first for a lot of reasons in Japan. They had the baby boom was such a large generation everywhere it hit in the developed world. That boom, that baby boom bubble and burst on a lag causes a bubble 20 years later, inflation, and then, you know, 46, 47 years later in spending and economic growth, and then an investment in other things. And so these are predictable things, the size of the baby boom, which countries it'll hit where, yet nobody thinks that. Economists don't study demographics. Economists don't even care about people, for crying out loud. Oh, it's all government policies. Oh, should we be more, you know, Austrian, or should we be more Keynesian, and blah, 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 blah. Hey, all that matters some, but you know what matters? Consumers drive 70% of GDP through their spending. Businesses only expand their 10% of GDP with capital investment if consumer spending is growing, and government in most countries are something like 20%, and they tax the consumers and businesses to get their revenue. So who drives the train? Consumers. So that's why I study people. And yes, government does this, and government can stimulate, they can lower, raise interest. Like, that's all reactions, that's all more temporary. Although I have to admit, me and Jeremy Grantham and a few other people were early on years ago calling for this bubble to burst. And as soon as Trump got elected, I said, okay, well, it ain't gonna burst now with cutting corporate taxes and every pro-business policy on earth possible. But it is now. I was saying late last year, when the banking system started to break down again in the U.S., they call it, this little repo crisis.
Oh, yeah.
You know, big banks that normally fund overnight lending for everybody that's on leverage and hedge funds and traders and all this crazy stuff. And, of course, all of Wall Street is a big leveraged hedge fund now. everybody's speculating on betting that the Fed's going to keep pumping money out, and interest rates going down and stocks go up, and they're doing it on high leverage and making a killing. So yeah, that broke down.
And Harry, you call it, I think you call it something like that, you know, they're all on crack. This is, it's a drug induced economy, and they keep feeding them the crack, but eventually that is going to come to a horrible end.
Exactly. When you have debt, I mean, debt's healthy up to a point to buy homes at reasonable prices, which they're not reasonable in Australia because of the bubble and all this stuff. But when debt is encouraged excessively, and then on top of that, when debt starts to fail, governments print money to jack up financial assets to make people feel a little richer because they can't figure anything else to do, and you create big financial bubbles. Yes, that is not sustainable. That does cause bubbles, and they do burst, and they always burst badly. Every major financial bubble in history, financial assets, have been driven by excessive debt growth. By the way, I mean 4 times debt growth in China and almost that in the last 20, 30 years in Australia compared to GDP. You can't grow debt a lot faster than GDP without getting into a debt and a financial bubble crisis. And so, this excessive debt and asset prices and money printing is a financial drug. It gives you better performance now. It costs later, just like taking heroin or crack or alcohol or God knows many things you can do that'll make you feel better or even perform better now. People think they can fly off the roofs when they take enough crack. That's short. But it costs the health of your body. And the only way to get off such a habit is detox.
Yeah,
detox means you have to get the bad stuff out of your system. Detox is a deleveraging of debt, deleveraging of financial asset bubbles. The last time this happened on a big scale in the world was 1929 to 32. And you know what? Every time I bring that up, oh, Harry, that'll never happen. Central banks will never let that happen. Oh, that was history. Oh, we're smarter now. No, we are dumber than any time in history. Nobody compares to what central banks have done to print money to blow away a crisis instead of actually restructuring companies and debts and jobs and all of the hard work you have to do when you get out of balance. And even Warren Buffett thinks that all of this is okay. Warren Buffett is an idiot on this. Do not listen to him. I'm serious. I don't care how good a stock. Oh, you know what? He's not even that good a stock picker in the last 20, 30 years. By the way, he made most of his money and has leveraged off that since the 70s and 80s. So this is something that's happened in history. All the trends that helped it build up are predictable. All the consequences, at least at some point, from trying to avoid it the easy way out, i.e. taking more crack or heroin to keep from coming down rather than going to detox and getting healthy again, are also predictable. Now governments have lost control. It started with the repo crisis in late 2019. They called it a little crisis, Carrie. The Federal Reserve in the U.S. had to print $765 billion in about 5 or 6 months, you know, more than they'd ever done QE at the peak, just to stave off that crisis, and then the virus hit. And now they've printed, guess what? $3.45 trillion in less than a year, almost as much as they printed in the entire 11 years grand, you know, QE experiment. And that's exponential. This bubble's so big, they have to print exponentially more, and it's going to crush them. In 5 weeks, the world lost just in stocks, not real estate, not bonds, and all the other financial assets, $25 trillion. You know, that's more than all the central banks printed over the last 11 years was taken away in 5 weeks. And people think the central banks are in control. Good luck.
I love you opening people's eyes like that. But here's what I'd like to ask you. We look back at 29 to 32, they weren't doing the money printing at that point. Now, right now, there is so much on the agenda that they can't they just keep, you know, this, but let's call it a bubble. Let's, you know, call it the biggest bubble of all time. This could in fact, keep going. Asset prices go to the moon. They keep printing money. I now call it funny money because, quite frankly, it is
out of control. It is funny money.
So could it, you know, it would kick the can down the road is the expression people use, but could it keep going for so much longer whereby, you know, to buy a one-bedroom unit in Sydney is going to cost, you know, a couple of million dollars, but no one cares because, hey, it's funny money and it really doesn't.
And no matter what you pay now and mortgage yourself, it's going to be worth more a few years from now like it has in the last 30 years. And therefore, No. Yes and no. Yes, this has already happened. They've been putting off this crisis now for 11 years. They've been printing more and more and more. And now, just in less than a year, they have printed more money. The U.S. deficit just went from $1 trillion in a boom to $4 trillion. And they've got another stimulus program coming, another $2 or $3 trillion. Japan is committing 20% of their GDP to stimulus, money printing and stimulus, fiscal stimulus, and another 20% to loan guarantees and free loans and stuff. Yeah. I mean, okay, so you got to print 40% of your GDP just to get your GDP to grow 1% or 2% a year for a few years. There's a point where you have to print so much that it blows up. There's a point to where real estate gets so expensive in Australia or Shanghai or Manhattan or South Beach, Miami, where I used to live before I moved to Puerto Rico. And by the way, for a beachfront condo in a first world city in Puerto Rico, I'm paying 1/4 of the price of what it would have cost me in Miami. 1/4. So it gets so expensive, or the money printing gets so much, that the markets lose faith. I'll tell you, one of my leading indicators is really simple, Kerry. The smart money. We have an indicator in the States called the smart money flow index. They measure what the smart money's doing in the last 30 minutes versus the dumb money who react in the first 30 minutes after the bell rings. And everything's been decided by the smart traders before these people even wake up, okay? In the futures markets. And the smart money has not been participating in the stock market rises hardly at all since January of 2018. That was the last bubble peak that actually had broader support, even from the smart money. Ever since, less and less smart money. And guess who has gone up 4 times in the last several months in put options and trades? All the dumb money on the discount brokerage firm. Yeah. Small traders are buying highly leveraged call options like you can't lose at unprecedented levels. This is telling me it's the smart money who not only invests on high leverage and at the right time, when they pull out, they first pull out, which they did in 2018 forward. There's a point, which I think is just about to start, where they turn around and short the market on high leverage. And that is what ends the game. And they do that because they don't want to fight the Fed either. They're not idiots. But they do that when they think the Fed or the central banks are losing the game. And believe me, with what they've had to print, the Federal Reserve in the U.S. and the government just gave away the whole ship before just the beginning of the crisis. Well, what happens as we get into the crisis and it gets deeper, like in 30, 31, 32, or 1980, 81, 82, or 1973, 74, 75? We're at the beginning and they've blown the whole wad. So they're out of ammo, and yes, they can always do more. They're gonna have to do exponentially more. And remember what I said earlier, just in 7 or 8 months, they printed $3.45 trillion. The entire QE cycle for the Federal Reserve was $3.7 trillion from the beginning of it to the height, the peak of it. They printed that much in a tenth of the time, which means it's taking exponentially more. When does it get, they just printed $3.5 trillion. Like, what happens when they say, well, we got to print $20 trillion next year? When do the markets just go, okay, I'm sorry, even a nutless monkey can see this?
The analogy of being on crack. I mean, they'll keep going until they overdose. But
keep going, exactly, till you overdose and hit the pavement and either die or get dragged to detox. That's We're going into detox next year. I'm willing to bet a lot. I've told people, if we don't see a major crisis and a bigger crash, it's bigger than 2008 to 9, the GFC, in the next 2 years, I'm going to quit my profession and be a limo driver in the Gold Coast. I'm not going to stay here, not even Puerto Rico. I'll move to the Gold Coast.
Why the Gold Coast?
I like Australia. And one of the times I was there, we were doing back-to-back seminars in Brisbane and the Gold Coast. So I had three different limo drivers carting me back and forth. All three of those limo drivers had read my book. I'm like, that never happened. I'm not, you know, 50 Shades of Grey selling, not, you know, fiction author, you know? I said, why do you do that? He said, well, we love meeting people and we love the Gold Coast. And I said, okay, well, that's where I'll go if I have to quit my profession with shame, because this bubble never burst. No bubble. I also compare bubbles, Kerry, to be fair. And I'm not kidding when I do it. It's an exact analogy. It's not a kind of like to the male orgasm.
Oh, yes.
I take the Masters and Johnson scientific survey and plot of the male orgasm, how it builds, how it goes into that orgasm phase, and how it crashes, which is very suddenly and very hard. And I can put that pattern on any real estate or commodity or stock trend and immediately tell you if it's an ordinary boom, which gets overdone, natural causes, or whether it's a bubble. And everything's in a bubble now. There are very few things that aren't in bubbles. And then I say, well, stocks can crash 70-90%. People say, Harry, that's impossible. Commodities have already crashed. They were in a bubble. They've already crashed 70%, and they're still going to go down farther to 80. Oil's already gone down 85. Iron ore, your biggest exports, already gone down 80% at worst. And people say, this can't happen. Bubbles don't go down 30-50%. They go down 70-90 in stocks and commodities. Not in real estate as much, more like 30-50 in real estate.
But Harry, iron ore is pretty strong at the moment, the price.
Yeah, it's bouncing back. Yeah, you ever see a bear market that just goes straight? The saying for traders, because they love volatility, they love bear markets, much more volatile for them. Bear market rallies are the most volatile on the upside. What did we just get in the U.S.? A 40% crash and wham! The rebound was it was 45% up. Now, still not the new highs in most indices, but it was even harder and faster. That's a bear market rally. Go down.
Is that because people are just getting desperate to try and get back? Well, I'll get back in the market. It's all over. I mean, is a lot of people calling it a V-shaped recovery, and you're saying absolutely not going to be a V-shaped recovery. And I think you've also recently said that if you want to get out of the stock market, there'll be one final rally, August through October.
Yeah, well, we're in it now. I expected to peak, somewhere between late August and October. That's kind of end of the election. Normally, and this is the classic one, was the 1929-32 crash. The first crash was 49% more than usual in about 2 months. And then it bounced for 5 months, took back about 60% of the losses. And then you had the big long grueling down. One of the reasons you always get a strong rally against that first crash, because it's so violent that governments step in and you get very strong stimulus. And of course, investors, unless they totally pass out and crash, like the crack addict or the heroin addict, they're still hopeful. And and buy on the dips. They've been trained to buy on the dips. Well, that happens until it doesn't work. And so when this next one goes down, my view is this. It's impossible to have a total V recovery. There are major segments like travel and leisure and cruise ships and airlines and hotels and certain parts of retail that aren't going to come back for years. They will come back. People say cruises will never. No. People love cruises. Yeah. They will come back when we got a vaccination. People don't worry about this. And that will happen. Not immediately, but in the next year or two, that will happen. And this thing will go away. I'm not going to Australia until at least early to mid next year. I'm supposed to have two tours of Australia. You know how much that's $30,000 just an airline ticket just for me not the rest of the people that travel with me. Okay. It's lost. I'm not gonna fly anywhere this year for the first time in my life, except a little hill hopper to my island, 30 minutes away. Okay. First time in my life since I've been an adult. And I don't think I'll fly much next year. And cruise ships I never liked, but if I did, I wouldn't get on for a couple of years, you know. So you get a truncated V. I'm telling you, there is no way. U.S. was at 3.5% unemployment. We'd be lucky to get back to 10% in the next year. And I say the economy collapses again, because what's going to happen is we're going to come partly back fast, and then all of a sudden we're going to have problems. And a lot of companies that were struggling anyway, even with aid and stuff, start defaulting and defaults, you know, beg defaults. You know, the subprime crisis that started this whole GFC started in the U.S. It was only on 14% of consumer debt in our country, only a minority of mortgage loans, and it boom. Because once those defaulted, then everybody started looking at all the bad loans and bonds, and then they started interest rates going up, and they started defaulting, and they had all these packages tied up of CDOs, collateralized debt obligations. Oh, they're so diversified, you never have to worry about many going wrong at the same time. Well, they did, and then those blew up. Those were AAA rated, insured by, guess what they were insured by? Derivatives. Traders with no collateral on 20 times leverage saying, oh, I'll take that bet that bond won't go down. That's what they were collateralized by to get a AAA rating. It was total BS.
Well, we're living in a casino at the moment. We're living with money. We're living in a casino. Everybody's desperately trying to find how can they stay ahead of the game. Interest rates are down to zero or negative. They've got nowhere to go. And so let's focus on a little bit on Australia, because, you know, you said to us, our real estate market is in a major bubble, but I'm telling you, people here, they're talking about an 18-year clock, and that this is just a little dip, and that come next year, we're going to be off to the races. What do you say to those people?
And you know, if this goes on for another 10 years the way it has, then it'll cost $2 million to buy a piece of crap home in Sydney or Melbourne. I'm talking a piece of crap home. Only place worse than you, because I travel a lot, is Vancouver, Canada. And they're driven by the same thing. High Chinese buying, high Chinese money laundering into their economy, high proportion of immigration, keeping their Canada's weak, but the British Columbia is stronger. They're just like Australia, and they're the only major city in North America that's slightly more overvalued than Sydney and Melbourne, and it's going to crash. They have been banning, literally outright trying to ban Chinese buying, and it somehow happens anyway. So until the bubble bursts, it just keeps going. But there's a point. I mean, again, my taxi driver, last time I was in Vancouver, took me to his house. It was a glorified trailer on a tiny lot, and it was $1.5 million, and it should have been $200,000 to $300,000 in the good. I mean, this is crazy. The only reason this taxi driver had it is he bought it for $500,000 10 years ago. He couldn't buy it today. That thing goes down, he's ruined. All of his net worth is gone. And by the way, in the US, the percentage of our net worth that's in real estate, because we already got our clock cleaned once, okay? You guys, by the way, haven't had a recession in 30 years, huh? And real estate's gone straight up with only a little hit in 2017, a little, maybe another one here recently. You know, it doesn't seem possible that this happened, but it does happen, and it did happen in the United States. Our percentage of net worth in real estate is 29%. You know what yours is?
47%.
You know what it is in China, the only market more overvalued than you compared to income? 75%. You know the difference between China and Australia? Only one thing. 22% of their urban homes are empty. Because the government just builds homes to create jobs, tries to draw people in from rural areas into urban, because it triples the GDP per capita, something I know better than anybody, because I've studied it all around the world. And they don't mind them being empty. And people, Chinese, buy these.
By the,
oh, what, half the buying is second and third homes, which means speculation by everyday people, not just the rich. They're buying second and third homes and they're not even renting them out.
I know, it's crazy. So Harry, I'd like
to ask, so who's going to buy that real estate when they finally realize, oh, real estate's starting to go down. I got a bunch of empty condos. I better sell some. Who are they going to sell it to? Answer is nobody. My model, I have a bubble model for everything, commodity stock. My bubble model says in Shanghai, that real estate could fall as much as 78%. That almost never happens to real estate. It says 20 to 50 in different parts of Australia. It says 40 to 50 in the US, and we're not as overvalued as you, and we already got clocked, okay? But we have worse demographics. We don't have all these bright young Asians constantly flooding our economy, smarter than us, spending more money than us, and all that sort of stuff. And by the way, you guys are losing that immigration really quick, as you know. I think Chinese, the expectations of immigration is going to drop 85% the next year in Australia. And Chinese interest in real estate, just from April to May, inquiries dropped 65%. They're driving the leading edge of your real estate market. They're driving your demographics. Australians aren't having any more babies, white toast babies, than we or Europeans are, okay? You just have more, but better than more, you have better immigrants than any of us do. You have the immigrants that nobody in the world complains about, Asian immigrants.
Harry, right now, you look at demographics a lot. Yeah. I'm looking at it and saying, you know, we've got very much the haves and the have-nots. The middle class is disappearing. Social unrest, even here in Australia, there's an underlying social unrest coming out. I'd like to ask you your views about, is that going to become an even bigger issue? Because I know it's a big issue in the US. It's certainly getting to be an issue. It's not a big issue yet, right? And secondly, given what you've been saying right now, what is your advice to people like myself? What should we do to protect what we have, given what you believe is coming down the line?
Well, first of all, answer the United States, absolutely. If we have this much political polarization, our red-blue divide is as bad as the Civil War in the 1850s, you know, coming into that. If it's bad in a boom, how bad is it going to be when people are suffering and there's super high unemployment and all this sort of stuff? The blues are going to blame the reds. The reds are going to blame the blue. They're going to hate each other even more. I moved to Puerto Rico, an island in the Caribbean, which is a territory of the U.S., has all the U.S. Social Security and stuff and rule of law and all this sort of stuff, favored trade. I didn't move here because of the tax breaks, and they're very substantial. I moved here to get away from Trump America, this political polarity. Puerto Rico's been in recession for 14 years, and they don't have substantial civil unrest. So this is going to get very dramatic, and I'd say most so in the United States. We have, like I said, I can see it building in Australia. It's building in Europe everywhere. But I'm telling you, it's the worst in the U.S. So I am very happy to be sitting in Puerto Rico watching this happen. And since I don't plan to stay there forever, I'm 67. And one day my doctor's going to tell me, Harry, you got to move back to Miami so you can be down the street from the Miami Heart Institute. You know what I mean, Harry? So what I'm going to do when this bubble bursts is I'm not going to buy in Puerto Rico. The demographics and future are not as good. I'm going to buy a top-end condo 70% off in Miami. Miami is one of the three biggest bubbles to burst in real estate last time. It's a real bubble city because Miami's got nothing but real estate agents and good weather. They got nothing else. They got no major industry, no Silicon Valley, no Hollywood, like, you know, places like California. So what we see is, and this is hard to grasp because it only happens once every other generation, once in a lifetime. Actually, 90 years is the best correlation, 1929 to 32 crash. Yeah. We have this big bubble in everything. Bonds have been in a bubble. bonds have been going up in value since inflation dropped from unprecedented high levels, 16%, down to zero since 1981, a full almost 40-year bull market in bonds. You know, ever since 1983, unprecedented bull market in stocks, extended an extra decade by financial. It would have been over in 2007, and it was starting to be over until they printed all this money. So the bubble, the biggest thing, normally debt deleveraging was the biggest theme of the Great Depression. Real estate was not in such a big bubble. Stocks were. Stocks crashing, but that doesn't affect most people that much. It was debt deleveraging and farms going under back then and that sort of stuff. So you have to get out of the risky assets. And this time, since they chose, instead of lowering interest rates, you were right when you said in the 30 crash, they did a minor amount of money printing compared to today, only at the bottom, not before it and into the early stages like they're doing it here. So you have to get out of financial assets. The financial asset bubble is a bigger theme than even debt in this global crisis. So stocks, real estate, and everything but the highest quality bonds. That means AAA corporate bonds. In the US, there aren't many AAA corporate bonds out after this bubble. Bond quality's gone down, 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 down. Most bonds issued in the US are just above junk now. And then the junk bonds are higher than they've ever been. AAA corporate bonds, better than that. The government bonds of governments that are what I call best houses in a bad neighborhood. Everybody's printing too much money. Everybody's too much in debt. US, between the major powers, without a question on every measure, from money velocity, the quality of money investment and payback, from demographics, from debt levels, and everything else, US, and money printing. US has printed a fifth of what Japan's printed compared to their economy. You know, half of what Europe's printed compared to their economy. US dollar went up in the GFC crisis while gold and silver went down temporarily, okay? Gold went up in the early stages but went down at the worst because gold likes inflation and gold likes money printing, which signifies future inflation. So the US will hold up the best as a currency and stuff. So I like the US Treasury bonds, 10 and 30, in the recent 40% crash, which was just the appetizer for the main course coming over 2 years, starting later this year, which will be a much deeper, longer crash with a lot of deleveraging and debt restructuring and bubbles bursting. Guess what went up? The long-term Treasury bonds, the US went up 24% while stocks crashed 40%. Gold went up a little at the beginning and then went down 12. So it was down net, but gold held up better than any other safe haven. Bitcoin got cremated worse than stocks. And I predicted that. Bitcoin's just the biggest bubble at the late end, like the internet stocks were at the late end of the last tech bubble. But the surprise, and this was a surprise to me, Kerry, investment grade bonds, like AAA down to BBB, okay? Not junk. Those went down almost as much as junk bonds because the virus hits major industries so hard. If you've got a high rating and you go through an ordinary recession where GDP goes down, you know, stocks go down 20 or 30% and GDP goes down 5%, hey, you'll do great. When you're in an industry where sales drop 50%, 80%, or airlines 90%, you're a junk bond. I don't care what your credit rating. So that's what happened, the investment grade bond. So next time what I'm going to do, I'm going to tell people, okay, and right now the interest rates on these high quality government bonds, Australian bonds, I like also, your currency's been beaten back down only because it was way high. It's back down in the normal 60s, 70s, and 80s where I said it would go back when it was over a dollar. And you have the lowest government debt of any major developed country, 40% of GDP, it's 106 in the US, it's 260% in Japan, and a lot of other people are over 100%. Your big problem is real estate and your consumer debt and the bank exposure, 75% of loans to real estate. So you get out of risky assets, you get into the highest quality bonds, AAA corporates, but even that, I would start with the Treasury bonds and the Australian government bonds, okay, long-term, at the beginning, and as we prove that, say, the virus doesn't come back and have this secondary effect of just massive shutdown, which I don't think it will. U.S. is the worst house in that one case. And even we're smart enough to learn a little
bit. Well, South America's not doing too crash hot at the moment either.
No. But you know, I hate to say it, they don't matter. Yeah. Nobody cares about Brazil. Nobody cares about Turkey.
Good point.
You know, even India. China is the preeminent emerging country, and it's going to go down the hardest, by the way.
Let's talk about China and India, because here in Australia, of course, our trading partner has been China for a long time. We have relied a lot on China. It's getting a bit wobbly at the moment, Harry. It's starting to, like, there's a lot of, I guess, diplomatic channels being opened and closed. What about, you know, India has got almost the same population. We don't talk about India. Is India going to be the next one cab off the rank, I guess? They seem to be fairly quiet at the moment, except for the fact that there's a bit of a challenge between China and India.
First of all financial assets, stocks, and the bigger the bubble, the bigger the burst, the most bubbly real estate. Look, two-thirds of the United States is not that bubbly. It's all our coastal areas. You are all coastal. You are all bubble. Adelaide and Perth a little less, only because Perth's had their ass kicked by the commodity crash in a more reasonable, and Adelaide because it's boring. Well, boring places are a good place to own real estate and when a bubble bursts. Greater the bubble, greater the burst. Australia, my challenge to anybody listening to this, whatever you own, an office building, your house, your vacation home, your trailer, what was it worth in 2005?
Yeah.
That's my best target for where it'll go back. That's just, first of all, that's only 15 years back and a whole glorious real estate bubble that's been going for decades and decades, okay? That's going to shock people. It is going to be 30, 40, 50% for most people and some more in high-end stuff. So you get out of the bubbly stuff. The countries, China is the epicenter of this bubble, like the U.S. was in the roaring 20s bubble. It was a global bubble in stocks and things and in debt and stuff. U.S. was the up-and-coming emerging country like China today, catching up with Europe. And in World War One, when they were fighting, we took over all their markets. World War One was the best thing that ever happened to us. And we only came in at the end, you know, and got some casualties and expenses. So the U.S. was that. We were the epitome. We had the biggest crash. China has expanded world GDP more than any other country, grown 10, 12% at height when we're growing 4 to 5% at height in the U.S. They have the highest, they have three times the total debt ratios of most emerging countries. Three times. They have as much as the U.S. in total debt in their emerging country and don't deserve that. They have the 22% empty comp. They have the biggest real estate bubble, the most overvalued from Hong Kong at 22 times down to Shanghai and Beijing at 15, 16 times. I mean, they make Melbourne and Sydney look cheap compared to income, okay? And Hong Kong's just crazy. So the bigger the bubble, the bigger. China is kind of the last to go down because they have so much government control and that they constantly play whack-a-mole. Oh, real estate's getting to, oh, encourage people to speculate in stocks to offset that. Well, that's why they had a big stock crash in 2015. Everyday people crying on TV lost their fortune speculating in stocks encouraged by the government because they wanted to take some heat off the crazy real estate bubble. So real estate will go down the most there, 75% net worth in real estate. Of net worth is in real estate. Real estate crashes. Chinese are going to feel poor overnight, and they already save way more than us crazy Westerners do because they haven't been rich too long, okay? They're going to clam up. That economy is going to fall like an elephant. So whatever you've seen in exports slowing to China now, you're going to see much more. What do we export to China? Not that much of our economy. You do 20% total, good portion of that. China is the dominant customer. China also, the Chinese are constantly laundering their money out of China. Only one way, two ways they can do it, buy real estate or buy businesses outside of China. They can only take $50,000 cash a year, which is nothing for a rich person. So the difference is even though they put more money in the US than any other country, they put just disproportionately more in Australia and New Zealand because you're a smaller country. Yeah. And I would too. You're closer. I would live in Australia, but I'm seriously, I tell the audience every time I'm over there, you'd be my number one pick in the entire civilized world to live if I could and run my business and not be on times, you know, all this crazy stuff. And where do I like to vacation? Southeast Asia. I go to Southeast Asia. I get the same jet lag when I go to speak in Australia. It's horrible. So China is going to go down the hardest. India is the next China. India is not as poor as people think. They're just still rural. India is 34% urban. China is now up to 60. China went from 20 to 60 in the last three decades, faster than any country. Wow. That's how they got rich, but they did it too fast. India is the opposite of China. India has been urbanizing at a snail's pace. They underinvest in everything. They don't have a capitalistic point of view until Modi came along, and there's mixed opinions on him. But all I can say, he's better than what they had before.
Yeah.
India will take less of a hit, although a big one. Emerging countries almost always go down more than developed, as they did in the GFC. India is going to come screaming out of it. India is going to be the next China. When China falls, it's going to take longer to recover because why? They've got enough empty factories and enough empty real estate never to build another damn one for 10 or 15 years. And they're going to get hit the hardest. And foreign investment in China is going to, and they're going to clamp down, they're top down until they get overthrown. And I'm hoping this crisis is big enough that those damn bastards get overthrown. China's government is the Darth Vader of the world. Outside of the very worst Kim Jong-uns and whatever.
Yeah.
They are a top-down government who only keeps their people happy by creating jobs, by building stuff for nobody, which is not a good strategy in business. Anybody has a business, try to build stuff for nobody and have a lot of capacities and debt that you can't fulfill with your sales and see how well you do. That's China. They've been doing it because they keep controlling it and pumping up. When this thing falls, they will be the hardest. Japan. Oh, another indicator I have that proves that. Simple. Money velocity. Higher it is, the more productively you're investing and reinvesting your money. Oh, and you can only reinvest if you make profits on the first investment. How about that for accountability? China has the lowest money velocity in any of the major country in the emerging world. India's is 1.4. China's is 0.5. Miserable.
What?
Japan has been and is still the lowest in the developed world, 0.4. It's the lowest money velocity of any substantial country in the entire world, which was another sign that when their bubble burst, it would not only burst big, but they would have a hard time coming back. So China did the same thing. Japan is China. They overbuilt to expand rapidly. And then when the bubble came down, it was just devastating and they never came back. And Japan has the worst demographics in the developed world. Guess who is the first emerging country to already have peaked in their consumer spending demographics and workforce growth? China. In 2011. It's down steadily from there.
Yeah.
And the worst part of this, carry is something nobody sees. It's even worse. The very people moving from rural to urban areas for these jobs to build stuff for nobody at the worst wages when they're not citizens and choking on the pollution and traffic, these urban migrants are turning back and going home. Urban migration has turned negative since 2014. More people are going back home to rice paddies rather than toughing it out in overpriced, overpolluted cities where they are seen like illegal immigrants are seen in the United States. You're scumbags. We don't really want you here, although, by the way, we need you. Same problem we have with illegal immigration here. We need these people because nobody will do their job, yet we think they're scumbags and we don't like them. That's what these urban migrants are in China. So they're unhappy. They're going home. So now China used to be building stuff for nobody, but we'll need it in the future. Now those people are not going to even be there in any reasonable future. So that's why China is in a trap. I'm telling you, China's going to go down as the worst managed government in history. And I love it because China needs to grow up, join the real world of wealthy nations, which they're not yet, except in their best cities, and be a democratic government with some capitalistic constraints and balances and accountability.
As soon as you people let that happen, it's a communist country. It works on different rules.
It's going to happen when they fail so badly that they're embarrassed to death. You know who else is going to fail badly here? Who's gone total nuts? Central banks. Central banks are not going to have to be removed and curbed. They're going to be embarrassed out of existence. They're going to fail horribly badly and horribly visibly. We did not have a central bank for 7 decades before 1913. And without quantitative easing, just with constant interest rate stimulus, okay? Yeah. They caused within 20 years the greatest bubble in history at that point and the greatest depression to follow to deleverage and detox that bubble.
Yeah.
20 years it took the central bank to blow up something that would have already been a boom into a debt bubble and then have it crash worse than history. What they did then and now is not comparable.
No, they are on
this different. This is going to go down as a monetary experiment, and they call it experiment.
Yep.
The only right thing they say about it is going to fail so miserably, nobody will ever think about doing it. Oh, until 2 generations from now. It takes that long to forget. That's how long it took us. You know, Bill Clinton came into office in the 90s and just suspended all those Great Depression policies. We don't need these. We don't need to separate different parts of financial institutions and banks. We don't need to mark market the loans down to market. We don't need to do all this stuff just in time to blow up the next bubble. We do it every time.
Harry, this has been a fascinating conversation, but one of the things that do you know what? I'd love to have another chat with you in the second half of this year and see where we're at, if that's okay with you. But
I'd say late August, late August or so would be a good time. So we get closer to when I think we can figure out when this stock. Again, the good news, you do have months like, although I think stocks are getting ready to take a healthy correction. You probably have towards late summer to get out of stocks and real estate. You got to look at it now. You don't have to sell everything. But when you look at those 2000 prices, if that makes you upset, then and you do think you want to sell something, which I highly advise, everything you don't really need and love, you got to work on real estate now because that takes longer to sell. And real estate tightens up. If I'm late getting out of a bond or stock, I can still execute the trade in a second. Try selling a high-end house once the bubble starts to crack. Very hard.
Yeah. So although the industry down here is, you know, all you hear about is selling stuff over reserve, but that's a whole other conversation. Harry, let's talk about a couple of things. You were coming down here in May. Clearly coronavirus has changed all of that. Now you have a fund that you're launching. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Yes. Only in Australia at this point, the Dent Sector Fund. I met on my last couple tours in Australia, we had a speaker from the financial services industry, was a real expert and started some funds and financial advisory firm. He totally got my stuff. Believe me, people in the financial industry do not get my stuff. You don't know what's going to happen. You're supposed to just diversify in some blind ways and have an all-weather portfolio. No. You know, we say every season is different. I can define the booms and the busts, the inflation and the disinflation, literally down to years, and know when to favor certain sectors and when not. We know every single consumer sector is going to boom at different times of their lives in every country. So this fund has the freedom to kind of pursue all those investments when necessary. Yes, we're diversified. Yes, we build into stuff. We do all the things a good fund does, but we diversify only in sectors that are favored in the season we're in. And we're in the winter season, about to see the worst of it. That means bonds are highly favored and almost everything else is suspect for the next several years.
So why launch a fund now and why Australia?
Okay, Australia because I've been promoted there by GoCo Group since 11 years now. They have had much better strategy than the marketing firm we use for our newsletter, which we split off from, frankly, because they attracted the wrong people. They've really positioned me right. We have a higher quality audience and a higher percentage. I probably sell certainly I sell less books than the US. We're 13 times that, but I probably sell 3 or 4 times more books per capita in Australia. Higher quality audience, but also meeting this guy from Stone Group, Andrew Stewart, what convinced me, he gets what I'm talking about. Anybody else in the US I've ever talked to, mutual fund, well, Harry, yes, but we can't do this, and we can't. Well, I'm sorry, it won't work. I'm sorry I broke the rules, but nobody could forecast the economy, so I kind of had to break the rules to do that. But it also breaks the rules of investment when you can clearly, predictably break an economy into seasons. Why would you want to be in a large cap growth fund when from 1969 to 82, they basically went down, and they're going to go down in the years ahead? Why would you want to be in that or just rotate into the most defensive sectors? Even defensive sectors go down. So same thing. Why would you want to be in bonds in the 1970s when inflation's going up to the highest level? You know what caused that, carry? Nothing to do with governments. Baby boomers, largest generation in history, entering the workforce at great expense to raise them and incorporate them. I've got one indicator for inflation that beats them all, has nothing to do with government debt, deficits, money printing, or anything else. It's just people entering the damn workforce.
Productivity and velocity.
Predict that. And we're never going to see inflation like that in the developed world. Never in our lifetime. We're also never going to see a boom this big. Australia has somewhat of a chance in the next one. US and Europe have no chance of seeing a boom like 1983 to 2007, just because of demographics. So again, we let the fundamental, projectable, demographic, and cyclical trends drive our fund, and we will go where that goes. We will be a large cap growth fund when stocks are favored. We will not be committed to stocks, except for certain exceptions, when they're not, and so on. So it's a unique fund because I found somebody that understood it. Otherwise, I could not launch a fund this unique. And I have and continue to consider Australia my best audience. We're going to start this in Australia maybe 5 years from now or 4 years. We'll bring it to the US and Europe. We're starting in Australia. And you also have the best economy. You're going to come out of this. You're going to get hit by your real estate crash, particularly in the banks. But your demographics look like an emerging. If I looked at your chart and didn't see Australia at the top of it, I'd say it was Southeast Asia or India. That's how good Australia is. So you're also the best positioned close to Asia, where all the action is going to be. The next boom is going to be all emerging countries. Developed countries are flat at best, declining at worst, like Japan's already shown. Australia and 4 other small countries are the exceptions that have millennial generations that are substantially larger and will grow closer to an emerging country. So Australia's also got the greatest opportunity to come out of this downturn and roar.
Harry Dent, it's been an absolute pleasure. If people want to have a look at the Dent Sector Fund, is it dentsectorfund.com?
Yeah, dentsectorfund.com. You can get on our waiting list. I'm actually putting out an update tomorrow. I do that about once a week or so to the people on the list. We're going to come out sometime in July. We'll let you know in advance so you can be ready if you want to get in. Getting into this, you need to get into this fund before that next crash, the main course sets in later this year. So you can get in early. We'll keep you updated. And boom, it's real simple. And, you know, you'll know what's happening. Then you can make the decision at the time. But just get on the list. Doesn't cost you anything.
Harry Dent, an absolute pleasure talking with you today. Thank you so much for joining us. And we look forward to talking to you again in August. Let's have an update then.
Okay. Thanks, Karen.